Good evening, friends. Welcome to another episode of Figure It Out Podcast, where we go through the winding rivers of life. You know how we always say, the water that y'all was in yesterday that was difficult is not the water you're in today, and the water we in tomorrow is going to be better than the water today. So we just stay on our raft and we just go with the flow. Today we got a very special guest, guy dear to my heart, Mamacita Tish. Who do we have today?
We have Mr. Keenan Hudson. Although before I introduce him, I think it's only fair that you should actually introduce him.
Listen, fair enough. This is my guy.
I was like, that's your person. Let me know about who Mr. Keenan is.
All right, so my man, Mr. Keenan here. I'm going to read his bio real quick. So after being certified as an adult at the age of 15, and incarcerated for nearly 15 years, Keenan Hudson has since positively transformed his life. He took full advantage of educational services and self-development opportunities while incarcerated and persevered using lessons learned through education, religion, and music. As a productive citizen, and I do mean productive, Mr. Hudson aims to share now how his incarceration and the people who helped him could motivate and inspire those who he encounters daily. This is particularly true for youth who may be struggling to overcome some issues, which he is familiar with, and he can offer positive solutions. He also is an author, property manager, like I said, musician, community activist, and he's always on the front lines fighting for those that need that second chance. Mr. Hudson, welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Well, that was a lot. Not to get too into it, but you were certified as an adult at the age of 15. Would you be comfortable with explaining what circumstances you were in that led to that?
Oh, yeah. During that time, you know, of course, I was a juvenile, barely 15 at that. So, of course, as any ordinary kid, you know, city of Philadelphia, you wind up, you know, getting into nonsense. One of the main reasons that I started going down, you know, the bad path was more so because my mother had passed away when I was like 13 years old She passed away for cancer. And I mean, I was already a problematic child. I was always, you know, hyperactive, had ADHD, getting kicked out of schools, things like that. But leading up to my arrest for the crime that that I committed with some friends, by this time, we was already, you know, stealing out of stores. We were doing a lot of stupid things, you know, skipping school. I was going to night school and stuff. And just so happened one evening, me and a group of friends, it was about like five of us, we decided, hey, we wanted to rob people, you know, and just in this specific night, we robbed someone. And what happened was we were just supposed to carry out the robbery. It was supposed to be a simple robbery where we was going to take the money and roll out. But just so happened, one of the co-defendants I was with that night had a gun and shot the man in the head, point blank range. And just so happened, so lead again the robbery. So I wound up getting, you know, I was incarcerated for murder, first degree murder before they dropped it, but first degree murder and criminal conspiracy. So plus they stacked a lot of other charges, but eventually they got dropped. But yeah, and that's what I was in. That's what I was facing. So that's what led me in there.
Wow. Very sorry to hear that. So is it safe to say that you were just you were involved in the robbery, but as far as the individual losing their life, you were just kind of an accessory. And
I was more of an accessory, but for instance, like, okay, when I got arrested or when we were on the run, the only people that the detectives were worried about was capturing was the planner and the shooter. And I was the planner.
Oh.
So okay. We conspired in that way. So even though I didn't plan for the man to get killed or anything, but I planned like the setup of how we was going to do it. You see what I'm saying? So. Okay. And like I said, I told you it was five of us, but only two of us served time. one person got immunity and the other two they just let go because they wasn't really concerned about them.
Oh, okay.
Right. Yeah, all were juveniles.
All were juveniles. I was actually the youngest. I was barely 15. Everybody else was like 16, 17. Yeah, and I was the youngest. Even though I was the biggest, I was the youngest though.
Right. Oh, wow. Now not walking in those exact shoes, like in the penal system and going to jail as an adult is traumatic. But like experience of going as a juvenile, certified as an adult. So like you're not going to like the Quahana boot camp with the juveniles camp. Like they're trying to put you in actual prison with grown men that the heinous crime. So like how was that affecting you as a juvenile going into a place like that where like this is the concrete jungle?
Yeah, well, first off, when they do certify as an adult, of course they charge you as an adult first before you're convicted or if the judge, finds whatever the verdict is. So going straight in, it was a juvenile block on a state road in Pennsylvania at the House of Correction. So I was actually on the juvenile block for 2 years. I was really only supposed to be there for a year, but I allowed them to postpone my sentence because I wanted to get my diploma. I wanted to get my diploma before I went upstate. So long story short, so yeah, when you're down there, you're going to juvenile block before, you go to trial and things like that. But even though I was certified as an adult, once I went upstate, then it became a different ball game. Now they can put you around adults, you can be around. But even on the juvenile block, it was real ruthless. You was around a lot of individuals that, we had different, like a lot, I mean, everybody come up differently. Now, I'm not saying that I came up with in a bad family. My family hated me and things like that. No, I actually had a good family. I had a good, mother. I had a good, grandma. I'm not saying we was rich or anything. We still had food stamps. We still struggled. Still was from the hood. But I was brought up with manners. I was brought up, with proper etiquette, to know how to present myself in a lot of ways. But I just acted a fool, because I was a kid. So, but when you in there, you're dealing with cats, that pretty much that, they have been, some of them were abandoned. Some of them were in foster care. Some of them already went through group homes, foster care, and things like that. So they went through a lot of traumatization, in their lives. I went through a lot of things as well, but I mean, some people probably had it worse. I know some individuals, like literally like right now, that I can remember back on the juvenile block, they couldn't read or write. I can remember, helping them with their commissary slips, filling it out. And that person, this is just one of the people I'm talking about. That person actually went home about 5 years later, went out, committed a homicide, killed somebody. And now he's back in for the rest of his life. But here it is. He had it real rough his whole life. And now it is, he all the way up Albion, Lake Erie, sitting in a cell, not knowing, and you can see the things, the way they used to have to handcuff him and put him in restraints because he was capable of doing a lot of things. And this is as a kid, as a juvenile. So it was a lot, again, it was a lot of things you see, you was exposed to there. But, when you're in the county, time goes like this. So after being in all the fights and the riffraff and the stuff down there, you wind up going upstate. So that's when you were around all the adults at that time.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And you did 15 years. So you were, like you said.
Well, yeah, I did a total of 13, but usually I say nearly 15. Yeah, I say nearly, just round off to nearest. But, yeah.
Right. So most of your, I would say the good years, your 20s, where most individuals in their 20s are, just kind of exploring and getting a sense of what life is on their own. And here it is, you're unfortunately sitting behind a jail cell for, an unfortunate act that you committed. So my question is, when you came out, how was that transition for you?
That transition was actually, Wow, because I always speak about this in a lot of events that I go to. So I just spoke on my podcast, which is the Reentry Connect podcast, right? I spoke on something about the Peter Pan syndrome. Now,
Okay.
we all know the fairy tale about how Peter Pan, kids never land, they never got a chance to grow up. A lot of times people can refer, to Michael Jackson and the situations that he was in. So long story short, just to give a little input on what I mean about that is, so I went away as a kid. So when I went into the prison, everything went on pause. I mean, I went in jail, everything went on pause that was around me. So I was 15 years old here. So all this stopped right there at the
Right.
door. So when I went into prison, I was doing my time. I was understanding the time. I was growing to be a man inside the environment that I was in. I wasn't learning to be a man out here in the world because I never knew what it was to be a man in the world because I was in prison. I was conforming to my environment.
Right.
So I was learning to survive, knew how to, art of survival in there, protect myself, whatever the case may be. But once the doors opened and returned to society, my mind went on resume. Everything was off a of pause. So the only thing I remember was 15 mentally.
Right,
You
okay.
feel what I'm saying? So now it really stunts your growth. So it stunted the growth because now I grew up in an environment that had nothing to do with responsibility. It had nothing to do with, hey, this is how, I mean, some things you better get up for work. You really didn't even have to go to work. They still paid you, things like that. But out here, you got real bills. You got real things that you have to do. You had to really take advantage of. And not necessarily take advantage of, but really have responsibility to take care of. And so I came home, didn't have mommy and daddy to run to. Again, my mentality in a way, I was smart, like I knew a lot of things, but at the same time, I had to remember that time moved on. And what I mean by that is something simple is okay, I was riding on public transportation because I didn't have a car when I first came home. And I was riding past an old high school of mine. And I said to myself, I said, I wonder if my friends and them still go there. Or I wonder if we should come go to this other high school. I wonder where they at. But then I had to get a reality check, like, yo, people grew up. People had kids.
Right.
It's a long age gap now. This is not, that's when I had to say, whoa. I had to, had that reality check, like, nah, you're grown now. You're an adult. You see what
Right.
I'm saying? Even though I was an adult in prison, yes, but being adult in the world, it's like, no, mommy and daddy can't hold your hand.
Right.
You got to get up for work. You got to rather rain, hell, sleep, or snow. You know what I mean? We had to realize that this was life. But again, that was something that I had to learn over time. See, most individuals, when they return to society that haven't experienced life all like that, a lot of times they don't know what to do because they want everything now, now, now. Right before they went to jail, they was living at mommy's house. Or right before they went to prison, they was, still receiving handouts and things like that. But if a person doesn't grasp that concept of, hey, this is reality, and even though you're not going to learn reality overnight, you got to start somewhere. You got to take your time with it. So it was like a new thing because, like, mind you, because you're coming from an environment where everything is pretty much predicted. When you was getting up for count, everywhere, when you was going to chow, when you was going to the yard, when work lines was being called, when school lines were being called, when the programs are going to be called. Sometimes they may halt the movement if it's a fight or something like that, but eventually it be resume normal operations.
Okay.
Cool.
Now,
Out
I
here.
don't want to come. I'm sorry for cutting. I don't want to compare that to the military, but they are not to say PTSD, but there are situations to where when your life is predicted and they're telling you what to do 24/7 as they are in the military, when to sleep, when to eat, when to fight, as far as prison, when like you said, when a child is, when commissary is, when yard lines is, churches, chapel, stuff like that. But even to the sense of when people go to school. Like school, you go to school, the bell rings, what classes you got. So when people get out of college or high school or prison or the military, there
New
is an
direction.
adjustment all around.
It is. It's a huge adjustment because now you can't rely on that bell to ring. You got to set your own alarm clock. You know what I'm saying? You can't rely on the chow hall to have food for you. You got to go to your refrigerator if you have food in there. You know what I'm saying? Like, so, you know, you can wake up and your car may have a flat. You still got to get to work. Not unless you
Absolutely.
want to suffer the sanction. You know what I mean? So it's a big adjustment that a lot of individuals, because even, and not just, and you don't have to just be a juvenile to suffer from that Peter Pan syndrome. What I mean by that is, like, there's some people, like average 18-year-olds, 19-year-old, 20-year-olds, 21-year-olds, a lot of them are not really capable of functioning outside in the outside world by themselves. They're not going to be able to sustain any rent by themselves because they haven't matured enough to understand or even make the type of money to sustain themselves. And then sometimes I think they try to extend the age to like 26, where they allow people to stay like in foster care and stuff like that, feel as though that they're mature enough to take on that responsibility. But nowadays, if it's not taught in the house, responsibility, if it's not taught to people, you know, just in general, they'll never learn. They're always going to fumble the rock, going to fumble the bag, going to earn money, spend it, keeping up with the Joneses, not being responsible, and all the above.
So, my question to you is, when anyone coming out of the system, is coming home, do you feel because they don't have the resources or the support to transition back into normal life that they succumb to going back to their old ways because they have that mentality of where they were when they first got in there?
Yeah, see, a lot of it has to do with wanting to change. You know, no individual can change anybody else. The only person you can change is yourself. So if an individual wants to keep that mentality, they're going to constantly find themselves going in a circle. It's like, how do you expect different results if you keep doing the same thing over and over? If you're not seeing any results, obviously something is not working. So it, you know, a lot of times examining self plays a big part. And sometimes people just don't want to put in that work because it takes some work to, hey, I want to change myself. I want to do something, you know, good with my life. I want to be involved in my children's life. Hey, I want to do something good for the community. But under the pressures of life, sometimes that's hard. The pressures that, hey, that I got to keep a roof on my head. The pressures of that, the peer pressures of, I don't want to wear this because they're going to laugh at me. It's like, if you don't get over like certain types of childish ways, you're going to be stuck in those ways. You see what I'm saying? So it's all about changing self, you know, and wanting to do better for yourself. The mentality is always a mindset shift that has to happen.
Absolutely. So I don't want to, dwell too long on your past because your present and future seems really bright. So I want to talk about within your bio, it said that you took advantage of the educational services and the self-development opportunities. Can you speak on what those were that you utilized and how it got you to where you are right now? Because I can see I'm looking at your background, you've got a lot of accolades.
Okay, yes, thank you. So when I had went in, at the beginning, like I said, I was in going for my diploma. And I was always encouraged. I don't know, for some reason the teachers always said, you know, 'cause I'm not the smartest person in the world, but teachers always say, yo, you got a lot of potential. I don't know if because of my personality or, you know, the way I carry myself, whatever the case may be. But they always said you can go very, very far. And I ain't really paying no mind. I just was thinking that, hey, they a teacher, they're supposed to tell you stuff like that. But long story short, I wound up getting my diploma. There was a principal down there by the name of Mr. Hildebrand Pelzer. He's actually one of the top in the school district of Philadelphia.
Nice.
He was a principal down there. He actually brought somebody in, actually a publishing company. I think the head guy was like Dr. I think Derek Gant. He had came And they was teaching us how to be authors. So we actually wound up publishing our first book down there called Broken Promises. You know, it was a group of us. First, it started out like with a group of 15, but only like five or six of us stayed within it or whatever. So long story short, we published a little book as juveniles. So, but even when I was about to transition and go upstate, all the teachers was telling me, yo, you need to continue your education. You need to do this. You need to do that. You're really good with computers and da, 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 da. So I always took what they said because I was thinking, like, I'm going to get out of here one day. You know, I knew that, you know, thank God I didn't have life, even though they talked about sentences to death. But thank God I knew I had a date that I was coming home one day. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know what? I got to take them up on that. I'm going to just go ahead and I'm going to just get in to different classes and courses. And that's what I did. I got into my culinary arts class, did the cooking, graduated that with the NACTI and my serve save. Wound up turning around doing my business education, Mr. Michael McGall, advanced business education, business computing. So a lot of these things I knew that was going to be useful in the near future. He taught that. He said, hey, I'm going to train you guys on things that I know that is going to be futuristic skill. Because how many people we know that's illiterate with computers? How many people we know that's illiterate with a lot of the technology that's going on out here right now?
Right.
So, long story short, so I took advantage of those classes, wound up coming out, you know, one of the top in the class there, got transferred on an interstate compact agreement to Virginia. It was a big overcrowd of Pennsylvania. And some people went to Michigan, then some people went to Virginia. I wound up going down to Virginia. So I went down to Virginia. I got to some classes down there. Wound up taking computer-aided drafting. Wound up doing custodial maintenance. So I learned how to strip and buff wax floors, things like that. Got into the money smart classes. So it was a lot of things. Every time something opened, I just took advantage of it. I plug in. I always plugged in with some of the higher ups, rather it be the principals, and I would always introduce myself, and they will always say like that, take a like, and they'll put me on a list for it. I'd be like, yeah, I'm trying to get on the list. I just try to take advantage of everything. And little did I know that a lot of that was actually going to benefit me coming out. And actually, one of the other things I did that wasn't actually a curriculum that was given there, but I actually learned the gift of music. Yes, it came part of spirituality, like during the church, but I took the initiative to study music. Like, meaning I went to the library, I read about like literally like 100 books on music theory. But, you know, what good is the theory if you don't apply it? So long story short, wound up buying a piano, a keyboard, started mastering that skill. And then that's actually a lucrative skill that I utilize to this day. You know, I could play in any church, I could play in any genre of music. I could play, you know, I teach it, read it, write it, I produce it. And all this came from being in prison. None of this stuff, I never had a lesson when I was a kid or anything. So a lot of people find it, you know, like, wow, like, how can you do that? You know, cause I go into some colleges and some of the professors, you know, just converse with them. I don't have to play none. Cause they're like, you know, they're like, oh, I know you're good or whatever, but I'm not that good. But conversing with them, they're like, oh, what college did you go to? I'm like, I didn't go to a college. This is all, you know, just picked up a book. And that's how, and it was at that moment where I knew, like, studying a book is very powerful. You don't necessarily have to go to school, you know? Yeah. So, yeah, going to school, I mean, it's okay. But at the same time, it's just giving you a certificate, just saying, hey, I did X amount of hours or X amount of class. So, you know, but, doing that, I even thought about real estate in there, but I didn't really know how to pursue it. Everybody always say that, I want to be in the real estate, this, that, and the third. But I didn't really fully understand real estate completely until I came out and lived a little bit. And what I meant by that was I had to learn how to pay a bill. I had to learn how to get the lights cut on. I had to learn how to, you know, fix little things in the house if things were messed up. And this is all in apartments, you know what I'm saying? My first apartment was as a basement efficiency off Horizon Sun and Alani. And, but it wasn't much, but it was something. I didn't have to go to a halfway house. So that was a blessing. So what happened was I moved a couple times or whatever. Then that's when I was able to purchase my first property. But it came with time, you know, and understanding, you know, reading up on it, you know, my first property became a multi-unit, so a multi-family. So now I started saying, okay, well, this is how wealthy people leverage things. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to constantly keep doing this. I want to, you know, broaden it and branch it out. Now, I was doing all this by myself. Like, I didn't have no wife. I didn't have a girl with me to stand a third. So that's how focused I was. I was like, hold up. I want to make sure my future is correct. You know, at least the foundation before I just get out here and just start running around. So a lot of individuals ask me all the time, well, what did you do? Well, I had to plan the foundation first. A lot of people don't see, even though I've been out since 2016, a lot of people don't see them first 4 years. I've been work, home, sleep, work, home, sleep, work, home, sleep, grinding, saving up, spending stupid sometimes, but saving up, putting things away, rainy days, 401k before I started fully understanding what that was. But it was like just, you know, just going with the flow, not giving up. I knew things weren't going to be handed to me. I knew I didn't have mommy to run to or daddy to run to. My father lived in New York, but he wasn't too much of a help. Like he wasn't, you know, so again, and then my family that I did have was raised me, my aunts and uncles, and they still weren't the same mindset that they had way back when. And I'm not going to prison, not saying, oh, I'm glad I went to prison, but in a way, I thank God, because it seemed like he saved me for when I did go to prison, because I wouldn't have learned all the things that I did learn. Who knows where I would have been if I didn't go to prison? You know, I probably would have been dead. You know what I'm saying? I'd probably locked away for the rest of my life. Or, you know what I'm saying? I wouldn't have knew. But because there's a lot of cousins that I had, you know, they turn around, they strung out, alcoholics, aunts and them, they still live the same way. They all was living, especially at my grandma's house. When I came home, my grandma had just passed away 3 years prior to my release. And when I seen her house, the way everybody was shacked up in there, I was like, I'm talking about like at least about 10, 11 people in one house. This was a row house. So I was thinking like that. Thank God I did get my little basement efficiency when it was allotted to me. Cause I was actually helped. I was actually spotted like about almost 10,000, like 10,000, but the 10,000 went strictly to that basement efficiency. So I had to pay that off. I had to work it off. Mm-hmm. I was working that whole thing off. So here it is, my first job. I was working at a daycare. So I was working security, and then I was also maintenance. So I was working all that off. And again, it was just grinding because I was being told, oh, if you got a felony, you can't work nowhere. Ain't nobody going to hire you. Being so I knew the CEO there, CEO gave me a chance, you know, which I didn't mess up or anything. But then I wound up branching off, going other places. And then I started, you know, seeing other little work. Then I worked up Huntington Park, Cheesesteak Factory. They was paying like $7 an hour. By this time, I was saving up. I saved up a little, like, I think like $600 where I bought my first little Chevy Lumina, 1999 Chevy Lumina. You know what I'm saying? It was something. I was wearing my suits and everything in there. Like, I was jumping out, you know, because I was happy. I was appreciative. I knew that one day it was going to get better, though. I said, one day it's going to get better. You know, of course, people, oh, you should get a car to represent you. Well, that's the only thing I can afford right now. Right. You know, the same thing with the piano. I had a keyboard that was from in prison that I bought from in there, from Sam Mash. It was one of the cheap Fisher Price joint, but it was something I was able to practice on. Nice little quality, not none of the major stuff. So I'll tell you a quick story that, when I had brought that keyboard home, and then I had to go to some of these churches and stuff like that, they wanted me to play. That was the only thing I had. So I would go to these churches. It may have sounded a little Fisher Price, but I could still play. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so I go to these other churches, you know, everybody else, they got the big keyboards and all this, and they look down on you. You know what I mean? They look down on you like, mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, so good, cool. You know, they looking at me like that. Where does God come from? But I'm just there trying to be humble. But, you know, and that goes with the church hurt thing. But that's another story. But long story short, those very same people that looked down on me then are the very same people that's reaching back out to me now. Mm-hmm. You know, now that they see that things are going well, or they see that, oh, that you got this, you got that, or you got, and you got a whole studio, you doing, yo, what's going on? But now it's like, oh, now you know me. But that was showing me how the world operated, because I didn't know. I never knew. I thought everybody, I thought outside of prison, because I thought prison probably the most wicked place in the world. But out here in the world, it's just as wicked.
It's
just people wear different types of masks. Mm-hmm. People, you know, it's like they cover it up better out here. But, every face, it's just like playing cards or poker. You know, every face that a person has is not really showing their true heart.
Right.
That doesn't mean that. So I just learned like through trial and error. You know, I had a godmother who taught me a lot of little things. You know, she couldn't teach me how to be a man, but she taught me a lot of little things. Even when it came to like driving, you know, I had to learn how to drive a little bit and stuff like that. But yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it is safe to say that you being incarcerated definitely was a blessing, because you were able to take advantage of all of those different courses, which, like you said, have served you well now once you had transitioned out of that. So what was the first, or I should say, what was the first one of your trainings that you utilized when you came out? Like, one of those certificates that you got, what was the first thing?
The first, it had to probably be the custodial maintenance, the stripping and waxing. It had to be probably the stripping and waxing, because when I worked at the daycare, they had vinyl flooring. And I had told them that was probably the most, because I was in a plumbing shop as well, but that came later. But the stripping and waxing probably came first, because even though I was sweeping, wiping stuff down and things, you know, washing the door and stuff like that, it was a time where I was like, I'll do the floors. And the other maintenance guy that was there was real good handy guy. He was a Puerto Rican. He was a real good handy guy, but he didn't know how to strip and wax floors for nothing. Like, he didn't know nothing about it. But me, I was doing this down Virginia, because they had like a military type structure where the captains and them, they love shiny floors. So long story short, I was already a professional in it. So I wound up just going ahead and doing it. I wound up doing the floors, started using that. Then other people was like, hey, who did these floors? And then I started doing them in other places. But it wasn't something I wanted to pursue a career in, though. Mm-hmm. I knew it's a side hustle. I could do it. But I didn't want to pursue a career in it, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, I really,
you know, that I wasn't really your calling. I got you.
Yeah. And so time went on. But again, but all my life, see, having ADHD and stuff like that, always hyperactive, my mind is always subject to change. Like, one minute I want to be, like, when I was doing business class, I said, oh, I want to be the best person in Microsoft Office. You know, I want to know how to master Microsoft Word, PowerPoint, Excel, when they had access, you know, database, when that was popular. Mm-hmm. But I was like, I want to be the best in Excel, because I'm watching stuff on the TV, and I'm like, yeah. But then after that, I changed around and said, hey, I want to be a cook. Yeah, because I've got the culinary arts. But then I said, no, I want to be a money specialist. I want to do finance. You know, so it just, and then even coming home, it was like, hey, okay, you can have these type of dreams, but things like, I got a reentry packet that's sitting here, right, where I tell people all the time, I said, look, even though I had this reentry packet, I had to know that things would be subject to change. You can have things jotted down. Oh, yeah, I want to do that. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. But things, life doesn't, the inevitables happen. So absolutely, you can't just expect things to just work. You know what I mean? I mean, yeah, if you stay on that journey, stay on that path, you're going to run into some detours and stuff like that. So like I said, but doing that and going to factory work and rising in management, you know, and I was thinking like that, but they told me if you was a felon, you know, you can't, you know, most of you won't be able to make a $725, but here it is, I was making damn near $100,000 a year. Mm. So it was like, you know, so a lot of things people said or mentioned was like, oh, it was a bunch of lies.
Right.
You know, you just got to live life and understand it yourself. So.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So what is it now that you're doing? What do you
So
mainly focus on?
now I do a number of things between the podcast and Reentry Connect podcast, and I have my real estate properties, so I've been, tenants and stuff like that. I deal with a rental car company. I have rental city rental cars. I'm also a partner in a transportation company. I do a lot of music between playing and producing stuff like that. So I'm like, it's like a multi-stress. Every I'm all over the place. Like even after this, I got a meeting at 6 o'clock, and then I'm cooking at the same time. Like, but it's like, so I'm just all over the place. But I'm really honing in, because sometimes you gotta experience things to understand, okay, what your niche is going to be. So I'm kind of honing in into the re-entry sector. That's why I was a little hesitant of not sure if I wanted to launch the nonprofit yet, but I think I might lean towards that. Might deal with the nonprofit, but deal with it from transitional housing with a program attached to it. So I'm leaning towards that more, because I've been finding some momentum. A lot of people's been reaching out. We've been scheduling a lot of dates and meetings where I'm supposed to be speaking. Shout out to Mel Wells, One Day at a Time. I actually got to speak at an event for him as well, coming up. And there's a lot of other places too. So people with that experience, I believe that I have, because I have other books that I launched a book called The Unspoken Truth and Life Story, Keena Hudson. And that actually gives the format of my life, growing up. But what separates this book from a lot of books, right? And you won't find no other book out there like this. And the reason why I say that is because it was designed to show people, but not only people, but a lot of the young people as well, how it really goes down when you get locked up, when you hang around the wrong people. So in that book, it has court documents, it has statements, it has affidavits, it has newspaper articles when I was on the news, and I was in the paper a few times. It has everything in there. Mug shots, everything is in there. I even got a chapter in there called Who Told on Who. See, these are a lot of the things that a lot of kids glorify out here in the streets. Oh, yeah, well, yeah. No, this is how it really happens. See, when they look at some of these other celebrities, they tell you, yeah, this, that, and the third. They're not telling you the truth of what really goes on. The stuff that I exposed in that book, a lot of people are not willing to do that. So that's why a lot of times, when people ask me, like, man, that was deep. Yeah, I know that it had to be deep. Ain't nobody else gonna go on it like that. So long story short, there's other books I have as well. Like I got one, it's called The Incarcerated Juvenile Mind. Actually, I touched on the Peter Pan syndrome in that one too, one of the chapters. Then I have the reentry strategies, which is showing individuals, hey, listen, these are some strategies that I've used. Not saying it's going to work for everybody, because a lot of people got to understand you can't never really compare yourself to other people. Everybody's situation is different. What works for me may not work for you. What works for you may not work for me. So everybody moves at their own pace. A lot of people say, oh, well, how can I want to do the podcast like that? Or how do you do this? Well, you might not have the same drive as me. Me, I'm going to show up every time. I'm not going to give up. I'm going to keep it moving. I came this long by myself, and I'm keeping moving by myself. I'm not saying I'm not around peers or and things like that. I got, circle people, but at the same time, every you got to find out what is best for you. You know what I'm saying? So with the re-entry book, that's part of what I believe is going to be really good for individuals. And then I got like 365 days of quotes, and a couple other things. So a lot of this is going though, even with me speaking. Like I've been noticed a lot of speaking engagements been coming up, and that's actually a good thing. So I know that I'm talking about something that's right and that's going to really change the world. So
Yeah, well, one, I'm definitely proud of you, because for being in that situation, in that circumstance, a lot of time, like you said, people do get stuck on pause. People do have that I'm not going to make it mentality, and like, oh, well, they gave up on me, so I'm going to give up on myself also. Or they one door gets slammed in your face, then you take that one door, the almighty dollar, and just be done with it when there's 500 other doors on that same block. So and people, they don't realize that. And then so coming home and, like I said, doing what you do, like getting out there, saving, grinding, like people's like, I'm not going to go work for $7 an hour. I'm not going to go work for $10 an hour. I'm like, bro, you were just sweeping floors for 19 cents in the kitchen. That's your come up. People don't understand that. Like, you want to work for 19 cents. You're trying to go back for 19 cents, but this person over here offering you $10, you don't want to take it to get that leg up. And that's where people mentality. That's what gets me. Like, I love helping people. I love when people like give back, but at the same time too, like you said, you have to want it for yourself. Nobody can want it for you. Nobody can put you on the path to success. Nobody can give you the program. We can give you the opportunity. We can give you the all the water in the world, but you have to be willing to drink that water. You have to be willing to go.
Yeah, I'm not drinking. Yeah, yeah. Sure.
So, I don't know. That it's really, really, really thought provoking. You know, I can't relate, you know, thankfully, but I do understand the mentality that you can be stuck with when you are, you know, unfortunately incarcerated, and then you have to come out and then you have to, you know, deal with life. And then not for everybody do they come out into a situation where they have somebody to go to or have somewhere they can lay their head. So what you offer with your experience and how you did it, I think is truly, truly helpful to those who are willing to listen. And I think that's also another thing, is the willingness and openness to listen to somebody else is also a factor for those who come out.
Yeah, that is a factor, Tish. But at the same time, too, like you said, like everybody can't reach everybody. Mm. Like even in the penal system, to where there's different crimes or different charges, there's different elements of crimes to where drug dealers can't relate to murders, murders can't relate to rapists, rapists can't relate to white collar crime. It's just totally different barriers. Same thing with teaching, like there's different ways to get the right answer. So what works for you may not work for you. You may not understand it, but like same time, like put it in a teaching sense. You ever have a teacher that's trying to teach a subject to a student and they're not grasping the subject, but they get another teacher who takes a different approach, and now that kid's an expert in that subject.
There you go. Yeah.
It's the same thing here, like reentry, having different programs and opportunities. Somebody is going to touch everybody. The thing is to not give up on that population or that community. You want them to be productive members. They have to live with us. They're going to live next to us. What do you want them robbing us again, or we want them contributing to the GDP?
Exactly. Yeah, you bring up a good point. Like you said, it's the approach. Like, because even when I teach music, or let alone just think of a regular teacher, you know, some people you could teach off the chalkboard, but then some people you may have to use flashcard. You know what I'm saying? There's some people you may have to use flashcards that has colors on there. You know what I'm saying? Where people, memorization is different. Right. Like, so it's like, there's so many different approaches. That's why, you know, we can't look at people and think, oh, they got an organization going already. I can't start one now. Because your approach may be something totally different that may blow them out the water. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Just by having, like you said, having the experience, it's like outweighs a lot. That's why a lot of these little lawyers, they reach out to me and ask me certain things. And it won't be nothing major, like, but they'll ask me, well, how do you? And I'm thinking like that, because they of course they got the law degree, but they don't understand, they can't perceive that experience. So it's like, I'm like, dang, like you really reach out to me for that? Like, yeah, because you got all the experience. And that's one thing you can say, even if somebody was 80 years old and that has been in prison, you can't tell me nothing about prison. Period. Because I grew up there. Mm-hmm. I didn't go to a junior prom. I didn't go to a soft hop. I didn't go and apply for college. Mm-hmm. All those years were spent in prison. Right. You see what I'm saying? Like, so it's so much where it's like, wow. It becomes like, it's sad that you spent the time there, but then it's a benefit because you can teach others about the experience.
Right. Definitely.
Yeah.
What were you going to say, Andrew?
And I love, like, our premise here, like, our show, Kina, Figure It Out, is like, we're trying to help people figure out different scenarios. So, like I said, everybody's not college educated. Everybody didn't, because there's some people like my mom Deuce, you know, and Anne's right. She never been to prison at all, but she could relate from having some on the other side of the wall. So that's the thing too. Like people, they make these programs, and if you never been there, you don't know what that population needs. Like the same thing, like being on both sides of the law. Like I think honestly that police officers should, but they are cuffed and during training, but like they should be put in the cell for the weekend to understand the mentality that it takes to be there and what you're doing in somebody's life. Yeah. Same time too, like judges, they sentence people there, but had a judge ever sat in the cell and actually realized what self-confinement does? Like these are other things that have to be done. And so it's great. So same thing, like you cannot teach a subject if you didn't go in that subject. Right. A car mechanic can't teach you how to paint. An electrician can't teach you plumbing. Like there's different factors, different expertise for different things for different people. That's all I'm saying. Same thing, like me and Tish, when we were doing like podcasts and topics, like everybody's like, oh, like you got a podcast, but like there's no one right. We had a whole episode on how to do a podcast. Like there's no right or wrong way. Like my cup of tea may not be your cup of tea. You may like sugar lumps. I might like raw sugar cane. Like it's totally
separate. Yeah, that's it. Like you said, there's no right. You just got to record.
Right.
Like you just record whatever your cup of tea is. And then the crazy thing is there's 7 billion people out here in the world.
8 like, billion.
Somebody's bound to be into what you're talking about.
That is, we said the exact same thing.
Yeah, yeah. People just think it's always going to be people in my community. Somebody just like now, there's people in California, North Dakota, and all that support me better than some of the people. So yeah, I said when I started seeing that, I said oh, okay, I see what some of the you know some of the influencers may say like yeah, you just yeah, hit record, just start going. And it's true because I started seeing like especially when I started understanding like. How to put stuff on the platforms and how people tap. And I'm like, dang, like, how you find me? Oh, yeah, we heard it pop up over here. Because there's some apps that people have in those, like in the West Coast, that we've never even really heard about. Okay. And there's apps over here that they haven't really heard about. So it's like, dang, like, how I get on that? Yeah, because you can do this. I was like, okay, bet. And that's how you build that connection. You just keep going. That's why I don't worry about what people going to come in, going to criticize. They're going to throw stones at you. They're going to talk. Oh, you should have did this. You said, but why aren't you doing? All right, keep it moving. Thank you. And I've mastered that now, though. Like, when people try to come and, you know, and try to talk trash or try to tear your stuff, then you just keep it moving. Like, you ain't got to deal with that person. Right. You know what I mean? Like, people go, oh, yeah, I could get you on a TV show. Well, how come you not on a TV show? You know what I mean? Like, so you just keep it moving. Like, you know.
Yeah, definitely. So I would like to I definitely want to connect with you after, like we definitely should connect, you know, seeing that we both do podcasts. But what we like to do before we end our episodes is to ask our guests a series of questions. Nothing too crazy, nothing too hard, very light and easy. And I'm going to let Andrew ask the first question.
Okay.
Keenan, no the first question is be great. What book or books are you currently reading?
Currently reading?
Big on reading here on the show.
Yes.
One book is
right there. Pull it right out.
I will teach you to be rich.
I know that's right.
Right. Now he didn't say it's by Ramin Sethi, but I'm pronouncing it right. He didn't say I'm gonna show you how to make $1 million and all that. But the theme of this book is more so it shows you like how when money does come in and things like that, where to put your money, how to utilize in certain places. Don't just do this or do that and da da da. You know, so it gives you a format of how to do certain things and how it gets you or how wealthy people get to a certain point. Because again, there's some things that just not taught in school, even in certain finance classes. You know what I'm saying? They're not going to teach you how to borrow against your assets, you know, how to put that against something or take out on the mortgage and, you know, then get that money back. It's so many, you know, put in a dividend. So long story short, it's teaching you, it said, I would teach you to be rich. That's the name of the book.
Nice. All right. Got to check that one out. I'm always looking for some way to get financial gains. So my question to you is, what was the last thing that you figured out?
The last thing I figured out. Whew. The last, because it was tough, because actually I was on the phone all day with the IRS.
Ooh.
Not necessarily the IRS. Excuse me, the Philadelphia tax service.
Tax.
Oh my God. When you got these LLCs and stuff like
yes.
that, and you don't follow due to register, then you got to do certain things. As I had to figure it out, my CPA told me, she said, listen, if I do this for you, I'm charging you $200 an hour. I said, is you crazy? But that's a profession, and she's mm-hmm. built like that. Mm-hmm. So I had to figure it out. I was on the phone for about 2 hours before somebody got through. I'm saying, do you want to call back? Call back. I did that last week. Ain't nobody never called me back. So I stayed on the phone, whatever I was doing, and I got through. They said, yeah, you got to go in here. You got to go put another email, and you got to do that. So I figured it out because I did the research. I said, okay, now I got to get this done because then I got to register this that wasn't registered. Mm-hmm. You know, that's another thing. You got to stop looking for people to do things for you. You got to research it yourself.
Right.
But you do this LLC, this, that, and third, but you didn't do the final processes because now the taxes is coming back saying, oh, well, being though you have businesses and you have earned income, and now you, in order to even file the tax, you got to make sure this is registered first just to show the profits and losses. Mm-hmm. So you see what I'm saying? So so I figured it out, though. I figured it out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh man. All right, Keenan. So in all your years and the people that you know, the people that you come across, what is a good piece of advice that you have received?
A good piece of advice I received is you can always make money. You can always inherit a lot of things, but you can never give back time. Time is just going to constantly keep ticking. It's not, it doesn't wait for anybody. And so it's always best to, whatever you're achieving, whatever you're trying to do, just do it. Because, you know, again, knowledge is power. But again, time is not waiting for anybody. So you got to really protect your time. Even with people, whatever the case may be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Our most infamous question, and I love to hear everybody's answer, is from your perspective, what age should someone have life figured out?
Ooh, that's tough. Yeah, some people, you know, it takes a very long time. And I think you can never have life figured all the way out. You know, again, everybody's situation is different. Everybody come from different upbringings. You know, if a person is not taught certain things at an early age, you know, sometimes their life may be the result of what they was taught growing up. Mm-hmm. So figuring out life, that's kind of a broad question because you got to look at it in a lot of ways. Because I mentioned earlier that average kids, 18, 19, 20, 21, 26, some of them still don't have a grip on life, you know. And then what is figuring life out? Is it just paying bills? Is it managing your money? Because I know people that pay bills, but are all bad managing money. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I know people that, you know, manage money, but have no clue about life. You know, exactly. Have no idea, no direction. You know, so it's just, there's so many ways you look at that. And again, that always stems back to purpose. And I know that's another subject, but knowing what your purpose is in life is key too. And I'm still trying to figure out mine. But the more I constantly get involved and do things, step out on faith, is the more things will be revealed to you. You know what I mean? Okay, this clicking here, that's clicking. But it's always best to do something. It's better to try and fail.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's just not do anything and look stupid.
Yeah, that's all right. So,
mm-hmm.
Not mad at that.
Mm-hmm.
What you got, Andrew?
All right, Keen. Tell us one takeaway. Tell us one takeaway that you would like people to gain from listening to your journey today.
One takeaway would be never worry about what people think. Things come over time. They come in increments. Nothing comes overnight. It's like building credit. You know, it gradually comes. You know what I mean? It's not just going to sprout up. Oh, just because things are 750, oh, that doesn't mean you have good credit. Like, you know what I'm saying? It takes ingredients to make the credit, mixed credit, your payment history, you know, your utilization, you know, so many different things that works into that. And not only that, you got to have a lot of different counts going on, you know, so people don't understand, you know, you got to, it just comes in time. Find out something you want to hold into and go at it. And it'd be good for you.
Gotcha. So I'm going to ask our last question. If you could have, if you, sorry, if you had the opportunity to assist a famous person with figuring something out, who would you choose and why?
A famous person with figuring something out. Never even thought of that. Never thought of that. I ain't gonna lie. That's a hard question to ask because I've never thought of it. Because I don't usually focus on other people's journey. I mean, I might see some of the lifestyle, some of the wisdom they'll give people and stuff like that. But I couldn't say because I don't try to change like people in a way. Like, so I don't know. I can't really, I ain't gonna lie. I can't, that's a hard question to answer.
Hey, no problem. That's your response. That's your response.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I have no response. Sorry about that.
No. Hey, that's
A-OK. He said, I ain't focused on celebrities. I am the celebrity. I'm just playing.
No, I mean, rightfully so. To be honest, everybody is a celebrity in their own right.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, you know, we got
a celebrity, Tish.
I know I am.
Whether
somebody believes it or not, I believe I am a celebrity. Mr. Hudson is a celebrity. You are a celebrity in more ways than one, with me, anyway.
So. We try. But Keita, how can our viewers find you?
So I'm on any social media under Keenan Hudson. You can email me at keenanmusic27@gmail.com. Again, you can always reach out, like I say, social media inbox, or you can email. Not a problem.
And we will be returning the favor and be on your show when you schedule us.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
When you schedule us,
absolutely.
Just let me know. We'll make our appearance on there. We'll paint. I'm gonna have an all men's panel too. I'll make sure you're on my all men's panel when Tish gives me
cool.
to leave when she go on vacation. I got
when
you.
I go on vacation, okay. Well, on that note, I'm going to say, all right, friends, be sure to like, share, comment, and subscribe. You can revisit this episode and past episodes of Figure It Out wherever you listen to podcasts. Make sure you're following us on Instagram at fio.pod. And we're on TikTok, y'all. We are also fio.pod. And our hope is that we helped you figure out something today. And if not, you know, I can't help you. It was a lot of good information given out there. You need to re-listen and absorb it. But until next time, you guys, peace and love.
Peace.
Peace and love, everybody.
Thank y'all.